Welcome to GovIT, a monthly podcast series from TD SYNNEX Public Sector, where we discuss the next generation of public sector IT solutions with the technology innovators driving the change. I'm your host, Tom Temin. Each month, we explore a different technology, what it is, and how it can help public sector organizations achieve their modernization goals and accomplish their missions. In this episode, we sit down with Quest Software's Director of Federal Engineering, Chris Roberts, to discuss the need to combat evolving threats through zero trust. And Chris, zero trust. I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart. And there's an auditing component for organizations, federal agencies, to kind of track what they're doing in cybersecurity and in zero trust. How should they structure that auditing?
Sure. Auditing is a word that strikes fear in the hearts of many who do a lot of work within not just the federal sphere, but also the commercial sector as well. So when we hear the word audit, we think of people coming in with clipboards and checklists and going through our documents. But in the security world, auditing really is making sure that systems function and do the things that they were designed to do. So case in point, think of a basic function of logging on in the morning, for instance. Well, what happens when you log on? I'm passing a hash between my workstation and some server or the cloud, for instance, and I'm getting a token back, and then I'm accessing information. The audit ensures that, for instance, that the certificate for that credential or the CAT card that we may use to log on are all valid, for instance, and then we monitor that activity to make sure that only those who are granted access in the first place are actually using that correct credential. So that's one simple aspect of auditing. It's also the aspect of keeping track of what happened on the network on a given session with that particular user. So I can come back at a later date if there was a problem. For instance, I can name several agencies as well as commercial organizations where they were hacked and ransomware was installed or data was exfiltrated. And when you come back after the fact, you want to have, quote unquote, that audit trail in your security systems in every point of access and every system and every object, for instance, where you can now sort of like follow the breadcrumbs of what someone did when they're in a network. So auditing is a key component to both real-time information as well as after the fact, justifying or proving exactly what happened on a security incident.
It sounds like auditing is very closely then related to continuous monitoring, because if you don't have continuous monitoring, what would you have to audit?
Monitoring is the live version of audit. So audit things is more long-term, think more permanent information. Monitoring is almost real-time or near real-time in a lot of aspects, for instance. So let's say I am a system administrator and I have privileged access. So privileged access, so think of those people with super user privileges or domain admins, if you're in the Windows world, for instance, or anyone who can grant the ability for somebody to do something else, or think of someone who can literally wipe or create machines at will. So that session, for instance, needs to be monitored in real time. I can't wait till tomorrow morning to find out that someone, exfiltrated data from a secure hard drive, for instance, or they were doing a search for PII data across the entire network, for instance, or scraping data from the network. So monitoring is a real-time activity. So I should be able to look into, in some cases, down to the session layer, into the packets, for instance, or even analyze the behavior of what someone is doing on the wire during that session. That's an indication of monitoring. Monitoring has different aspects. There's so many tools that are out there. Of course, my company produces monitoring tools. There's several large companies that produce monitoring tools. Most network hardware manufacturers, so Cisco, F5, and others, all provide monitoring for the hardware device. Now, when you get to software, it's critically important that you not just have the OEM's tools, so the Microsoft monitoring tool for their environment, but also look at third parties who provide added layers of capabilities to monitoring in cases and do scenarios where it's not something that's germane to the platform to give you additional visibility and make you more sentient when you're looking across your network operations.
Right. So you don't simply monitor external inbound network traffic. That's part of it, but also what your own people are doing throughout the day.
Absolutely. You monitor everything end to end, so to speak.
And you mentioned privilege management, the idea of privileged users and what they can do. And it seems like in the zero trust era, you need to really pay attention to how you enforce privileges, how you administer privileges, and how you make sure people can only get what they can get or what they deserve to get in the first place.
Absolutely. At home, I'm a privileged son. My mom treats me as a privileged person in the house, for instance. So networks and are pretty much function the same way. there are people who get special privileges, and we call those administrators, for instance, or super users. In the Unix world, it's even a command called sudo. That means a super user do, or they can do certain things. That means that I'm granting this level of access to people who have that authority. So think of anyone in the NOC, the Network Operations Center, or the Security Operations Center, for instance, anyone who can create a domain, for instance, or connect to your Azure or your AWS cloud, for instance, anyone that can change permissions. And this one is crucial because when we set up networks, the easiest thing to do is to grant what we call global administrative privileges. And that means that any admin in IT can take care of anything. They can create a user, delete a user, reset a password, all the mundane things, quite frankly. But what we found is that if you do restricted privilege management, that is, you only give just the right amount of privilege at the right time to the right person, for instance, depending on what their role is, you have a much better chance of protecting your network. The trouble with most of the data exfiltrations and ransomware and attacks we've seen is that they have gotten access to a privileged account that had too much capability associated with that particular user for their particular role. So if your entire job is just to create user accounts, it should not be a super user. It should not be a privileged administrative user, for instance. You should just have those specific privileges to lock down exactly the capabilities you do, and that makes your environment a lot more inherently secure.
So good privilege management then protects you from insider and outsider threats, in a sense.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and then users don't do anything unless they're on a session, and that gets to the topic of session management, and how can you make sure the controls are there for each session, but not drive people crazy through jumping through hoops to be able to get on?
Oh, absolutely. So sessions are, think of this simply as this communication right now. For instance, I'm on the network, you're in the network, I think we're on Teams probably. There's a session between my workstation to the cloud, in this case, Office 365, in the background, Azure and Azure AD, and then back down to your workstation. That entire session traffic, for instance, can be monitored, for instance. And now it's my job as administrator to determine exactly, one, am I accessing the information first and foremost from the right device, for instance? So in every organization, I can determine exactly, my mobile phone could be a credible device, my laptop can be a credible device, but if I go to, let's say, the coffee shop, and I use someone else's laptop, and I'm using a unsecured public Wi-Fi session, for instance, then that session could be rejected based on the parameters of how I'm connected to the network and the device I'm actually using. You can go a step further. Now, is that session coming in from a known location? So for instance, you can just develop what we call geographic fencing around your networks. That is, if an end user is in the continental United States, they get access to the network. So in my company, for instance, we do that. That is, if you're in the US, you can access and get to our high side of our environment. If you leave the country, let's say you go to Canada, or you go to Mexico, or you go to Singapore, you cannot access the network, for instance. So that's an example of good session management. If you don't have good session management, for instance, you are trusting the end user in 99.9% of the time to do the right thing. And we've seen time and time again that it is not the right strategy in a complex, highly secure network environment to place all that burden on the end user. If you put geofencing, if you put session management, for instance, you put some parameters around what they can do and where they can do it from, and what device they can do that from, you make your network, once again, inherently more secure than you can by just giving global access to any session you want to.
And regardless of the user privileges, to get a session, you have to have an authentication mechanism come in there to make sure the person can get on or to allow them to get on. And so how should organizations approach selection and implementation of their authentication mechanisms, again, in service of this whole zero trust idea?
Yeah, so coming back again to that access capability, and that is, authentication really just simply says, who are you? Are you the person that is supposed to be here? Think of if you threw a party, for instance, and I showed up, and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't invite you. What are you doing here? That's authentication in a very basic form, for instance. So authentication is, think of your challenge response. I have a username and a password. That's the most basic form of authentication. And that will grant me access to certain things within my environment. But however, we've learned too many times, and I think some big companies have learned recently, for instance, that just using a username password is not a great idea because we can do password stuffing. So every time there is a data breach, so think of the old Equifax breach, for instance, or just any of the number of retail breaches that we've had, for instance, they collect those passwords and they're sold on the black market, for instance, you know, or the dark web, as we say. Hackers get those passwords and they then write scripts, we call them script kiddies, and they'll stuff those passwords into a hack to basically see if one of them is going to work on the account, for instance, of a system for a company they're trying to infiltrate. And then one thing you can do to circumvent that is a couple, is one, provide either access tokens, that is, you have to have a physical key to one, provide another layer of authentication. So username, password, plus an authentication key that plugs into the USB port of a laptop or a device, for instance, or use multi-factor authentication, where now it's not just my username, password, I have to get either a text back, for instance, to a known phone number that is associated with me, for instance, or I can use an authentication app for any device. So I think Microsoft has one, Google has one, there's so many different authentication apps, but then I have to match the code in the app to the login session. So I put in my password, and I then am asked for, well, what is the code from your authenticator, for instance, and I need to put that code in, and then I get access to the system. You'd be surprised how many attacks can be thwarted that way if I just provide that extra layer of authentication. Sometimes it's two-factor, or it can be multi-factor. I know organizations that have two or three different factor authentication systems in place to prevent users from unauthorized access to their system. So it's a long-winded answer, but authentication simply means that I now control exactly the number of steps that are required to get the keys to the kingdom.
Right, and I think the key word there is multi-factor, because sometimes two is not really adequate nowadays.
No, it's not. And I think a lot of us depend on that good old SMS, you know, text code back. And we've seen that you can do SIM card swapping, SMS spoofing, for instance. So that's not a guarantee. So having multi-factor, especially in the government, the CAC is a great example of that. Or a secure YubiKey card, for instance, with plugs in to give you a multi-factor system. Those are great solutions as well.
And by the way, if you came to one of my parties, I would make you a privileged user. You could get... You could go right to the bar and help yourself.
I want to ride in the motorcycle.
All right, we'll do that too. Chris Roberts is the Director of Engineering for Quest Software. As always, thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you.
For more information on Quest Software and combating evolving threats through Zero Trust, please visit questpublicsector.com. You've been listening to GovIT from TD SYNNEX Public Sector. We'll be back soon with more Public Sector IT content. I'm Tom Temin.